Jason, when we talked back in, I think it was May of 2016, so it's been a little over a year now, I talked about how I felt that VR and AR was going to be the future of UX, and that we were about to go through a major technological revolution like that of the dawn of the PC or the smartphone. And in my opinion, that is doubly true now. It's something that isn't as much a prediction as much as it is an observation that we can make. We can see that it's actually happening before our eyes.
Welcome to the User Defenders Podcast, where we interview UX superheroes who fight for the users in order to inspire and equip you to do the same. And now, here's your host, Jason Ogle.
Greetings, User Defenders. Welcome to this very special episode. It's going to be two parts. I just spent 2 hours talking with Austin Knight. He's a former super guest, episode 23, I believe. And he is also a glad scientist, meaning he's been really getting his hands dirty with VR, AR, conducting his own experiments, and even making his website a VR experience. He's doing some really interesting stuff, really diving deep into this. And we talked for a long time, 2 hours. So that means two episodes, because this isn't the Tim Ferriss show. This is going to be a really interesting subject matter. I cannot wait to share this with y'all. What is mixed reality? That is, you're going to have to listen to really find out. Because honestly, I had not really heard of mixed reality until this conversation started with Austin. So he definitely explains it far better than I could and would. But mixed reality basically is like a combination of virtual reality and augmented reality. And there's some super interesting things happening, particularly with one company in Florida. Anyway, I'm not going to spoil it all. And plus, there's so much to cover. I'm going to stop talking. So enjoy this super fascinating special episode series and part one. Ready, go. Talking about virtual reality is like dancing about architecture. That's a quote from Chris Milk from his How VR Can Create the Ultimate Empathy Machine TED Talk. I think that's a very appropriate quote to start with, because we're going to be really diving deep today into VR, also known as mixed reality. I can't think of a better person to have this conversation with than my friend Austin Knight. Austin's been deep diving and evangelizing the renaissance of VR and mixed reality in recent days, and he continues to. He's been conducting a lot of various experiments, including revamping his website with a VR experience, which was very cool. Very, very cool. Fasten your seatbelt, because we're going to get into the weeds today. It's going to feel like you're drinking from the fire hose, because I know Austin has a lot to say about this emerging topic. So thankfully, this is recorded, and you can use this episode as a reusable reference and maybe even business rationale in your VR explorations, because I have a feeling that after you hear what Austin shares with us, and after you hear this conversation, I have a feeling you're going to want to really explore even more into this nascent field of mixed reality. So, Austin, welcome to User Defenders. I'm super excited to have you on the show to discuss this topic today.
Oh, man, Jason, I'm so glad to be here. It feels great to be back on.
Awesome. Well, let's jump right in. We have a ton to cover, so let's jump right in. So you use this term mixed reality. You kind of introduced me to this term, because I only hear VR, AR, and AI, but I wanted to ask you, can you define mixed reality for us, Austin?
Yeah, so as cool of a term as mixed reality is, I can't really take credit for creating it. It, for the most part, as far as I can tell, came from the team at Magic Leap, which is that super secretive, dark startup in Florida with millions and millions of dollars in funding and people high up in Google and Apple on the board, but nobody knows what they're building. But we do know that they're creating some form of an augmented or virtual reality device. And and they coined the term mixed reality as something that is essentially a computer-generated simulation of 3D interactive elements that are either displayed on top of reality or as entire virtual worlds through headsets, displays, sensors, and controls. So that's a lot of word. That's more of a formal definition. The easiest way to put it is that it's a spectrum. So we hear a lot of things about virtual reality, and then we hear a lot of things about augmented reality. And really, all of these devices that we're discussing in those conversations, they fall somewhere along a gradient of being a little bit more virtual in that they are fully contained experiences, or being a little bit more augmented in that they are overlaid on top of reality. And what mixed reality as a term acknowledges is that this is a spectrum. There isn't just virtual reality and there isn't just augmented reality. Different experiences become a little bit more virtual or a little bit more augmented. So the easiest way to think of it is that if you're using like the purest sense of VR, it's going to be a fully closed off headset where you're being teleported to a completely different world. If you're using the purest sense of augmented reality, you're going to be looking at reality, the world that you're actually standing in, but there's going to be other 3D elements and objects overlaid on top of it. And the implication that I appreciate the most about mixed reality is that it says we're going to take the best elements of VR and the best elements of AR and bring them together into a single device that operates all across this spectrum. So you can take more virtual experiences, more augmented experiences, all with the same device. And perhaps most compellingly, you can have an AR experience where you're looking at the world, you're looking at reality, and you will also have 3D elements and objects and interactions displayed on top of that world, and you won't be able to tell the difference between what is real and what is not. And that's a true mixed reality experience, where this AR and VR that you're immersed within is also integrated into the world, and there's no real way to tell the difference because both worlds are interacting with each other.
My brain is already tingling a lot.
Yeah. Think of all of the design problems that that will bring with it. It's absolutely incredible.
And I can't wait to dive more into some of those possibilities. And we've been talking about VR and AR for 10 years, maybe plus. What's different now? Why the sudden interest and buzz about it?
Yeah, so Jason, when we talked back in, I think it was May of 2016, so it's been a little over a year now, I talked about how I felt that VR and AR was going to be the future of UX.
Yes.
And that we were about to go through a major technological revolution like that of the dawn of the PC or the smartphone. And in my opinion, that is doubly true now. It's something that isn't as much a prediction as much as it is an observation that we can make. We can see that it's actually happening before our eyes, especially with large confirmations of new technologies and investments from the giants that sort of set the tone for what technology is, like Facebook and Apple and Microsoft and Google. And the reason for this is because all of the necessary technology that we need in order to create a real mixed reality device and experience, it's matured and it's falling into place. It wasn't all there in the 1980s, so we could only create things like quasi VR or use technology that required entire rooms to be built in order for it to function. But now, all of those little pieces, they're all starting to come together. And in isolation of each other, they look like toys. Like we talk about bots and AirPods and Snap Spectacles, all of these devices that each one of them, it's like, oh yeah, I'm going to build a chatbot, or I'm going to get AirPods because they're the new cool thing. They all seem like little gadgets that are coming together on their own. But when you bring them together and you look at them in the context of each other, you start to realize that they're actually enabling the largest technological revolution of our lifetime. And that's because when you put an AirPod with a eye tracking device, with a 3D sensor, with an Alexa device. I just said Alexa, and now she's trying to talk to me, my little Alexa device. This is a big problem. But anyway, when you put all of those devices together, what you realize is that you do have a full, real, possible mixed reality experience. So what does that mean? First, we have 3D sensors, optics, camera technology that's all maturing at an increasing rate. And what this allows us to have is these more realistic and immersive experiences for our eyes and pinpointed locations. So not only can the displays create visuals that are very convincing, they can also interpret what's around them using 3D sensors, and they can start to integrate the visuals that we're seeing with the environment that we're in, and those visuals can start to react from that environment, as I sort of alluded to earlier. We have eye tracking technology that can detect what the user is looking at. So not only is the display looking outward, it's also looking inward. And it can get pretty creepy. Like, it can start to tell, okay, this person really likes this object that they're looking at based off of their pupil dilation or the emotional expression on their face, or it can tell that you want something because you continue to glance at it. And then when combined with those 3D sensors that are looking outward, it may be able to see me pick up this mug of coffee that I'm holding in my hand and combine the weight visual data from the coffee mug with the expression on my face, and it can tell that I want some more coffee, and then it could order more coffee for me from Amazon, or it could, if we have a smart home system implemented, perhaps it could brew me another cup of coffee. So we start to get some...
I like where this is going.
Yeah, I know. Life is starting to get really easy. Basically, what I'm about to tell you all is that WALL-E is going to be real.
Oh, God.
Yeah. And building off of this display
technology. Hold on to those treadmills.
Yeah. So building off of this display technology, of course, we have a much denser display. So you may have heard of OLED displays that have a higher pixel density and a wider field of view. So we're dealing with in a VR headset like the ones that I was talking about earlier and the one that I currently have, we're dealing with over 4 million pixels per eye and a 110 degree or higher field of view. So, you sort of take like your 4K TV and just jam it into a single tiny eye display. And then we combine that with augmented audio technology. So earlier I mentioned AirPods. This technology doesn't just produce excellent quality audio. It also cancels out the audio that's around you. So that's how you can have such a small earbud that produces such great and immersive audio, because it's also producing signals that counteract what's around you. So now all of a sudden, not only are your visuals fully immersive, but the audio is fully immersive. And that's when things start to feel really real. And what's also compelling about these augmented audio devices is that they have accelerometers and other tracking elements inside of them. So you start to get really accurate head tracking. And so what that means is that the device is going to know on a very, very, very accurate level where your head is positioned, where it's looking, and how you're moving. So now your motions within this space start to get more accurate. And then you've got voice and gesture technology that's maturing. So the way that you communicate and interact with this device is improving. We've seen that happening through things like the Google Home, the Alexa device that I was talking about. You're going to be able to talk to these devices and gesture in front of them as a new way to input information and interact with the experience that you have. So you won't necessarily have to carry around a mouse or a keyboard or anything like that. And then you've got AI and machine learning maturing at a ridiculous rate, probably one of the biggest buzzwords that we're dealing with. And that's because it's so critical to the mixed reality experience. And perhaps it was the biggest piece of the puzzle that was missing every time that we attempted VR in the past. And I say that very cautiously because those old VR experiences that you're familiar with that you might have tried in the mall or at Six Flags, they're really in a completely different category and class from anything that we're dealing with now. And I would even venture to say that perhaps if you've tried the Samsung Gear VR experience or the Google Cardboard, it's not representative of what I'm discussing here. The only way that you could really start to get close would be to use an HTC Vive, which is the VR setup that I have here in my apartment, or something like a Microsoft HoloLens. They're in a completely different class of their own.
What about Oculus?
So, yeah, Oculus as well. Once they started to implement room scale, 6 degrees of freedom, that this is all stuff that I can define if we want to. That started to become more of a real VR experience, but I'm still very partial to the HTC Vive, both for technological reasons and for sort of like open source, better for the community reasons. But anyway, I can go into that. So the reason is the reason that we, the HTC Vive and the HoloLens are in a class of their own is they do a few things. First, the Vive has hand controls, so and the Oculus originally didn't have that, but they later implemented it. So in the Vive, you've got a headset, you've got two lighthouses that you position at either side of the room, so those are going to track where you are in the room, and that'll be important when I talk about room scale. And then you've also got hand controls, so you can move your hands around and interact with the environment. Now, when you pull all of these devices together, what they allow you to do is walk around in a physical space and interact with it using your head motions, your gaze, and your hands. Those elements Oculus didn't originally have. So you originally didn't have hand controls and you originally didn't have lighthouses. So you were sort of seated in a stationary position and it was just your head that was moving around and looking in sort of like a 360 orb, which is similar to what you would experience with a Samsung Gear VR experience, but just with a better display. Of course, Oculus has a very high quality display. The Vive allows you to do all of that stuff, and then they also have a much more open platform. So Facebook is really focused on developing like a closed platform, investing in their own technology and games, whereas the Vive is working with Steam and Valve to support more independent developers, have cross-platform development, so stuff that would not just work on the Vive, but would also work on the Oculus Rift and on other headsets as well. So that's why I'm a little bit partial to that. The HTC Vive is, in almost every sense, a VR device, but it also does augmented reality because it has a front-facing camera, so you can do some AR things with it. The Microsoft HoloLens is, in every sense, an augmented reality device. So that's like the HTC Vive of AR, and that's a completely different device that you know gives you a more AR-oriented experience. But both of those devices leverage from this sort of list of technologies that I was talking about that are maturing and allowing all of this to happen. They both leverage AI and machine learning to recognize objects, rooms, patterns, and enhance the experience that you're having. And that's what would really allow those elements to interact with each other. And then the final element, just to sort of finish out these toys and gadgets that are coming together, is quantum computing and a higher power GPU. So the HTC Vive has to have a very high power computer to run it. The HoloLens doesn't. It's fully contained. Of course, they're different types of devices. But it, with both of them, we're using a very high power graphics processing unit. And in the future, we'll see quantum computing and just like this really, really high power and fast calculating processor come into play, so that you know, if you think about it, like I was talking about that 4K monitor that's in your eye, basically. With VR, the GPU essentially has to power, depending on the experience, anywhere from like 12 to 25 4K monitors at a time. That's like the equivalent. It's like if you just took a 4K monitor, a bunch of 4K monitors, and surrounded yourself with them, that's the level of processing that your computer has to do in order to create that VR experience. So we think of like a classic gaming computer, that's gonna power, a really high-end gaming computer will be powering a single 4K monitor. So you really, really have to have some serious computing power in order to do something like this, because the calculations are insane. And the stakes are higher as well, because if you have any type of lag or latency, it's much more noticeable in VR than it is on a monitor, and it can make the user sick. You know, you really notice things going wrong a lot easier in a VR experience. So, but those are the technologies that are generally coming together in order to enable this to happen. So, you look at them in isolation of each other, and they're interesting. But if you start to sort of zoom out and look at the bigger picture, you realize, oh, wait a second. All of these things are coming together to create this single gigantic revolution all at once.
The dots are starting to get connected for me, my friend. The mixed reality term, it, just from what you just shared, is making a ton of sense to me now. Well, I thought that the headsets were just for virtual reality. But what you just explained to me is that this is crossing over into a truly mixed reality world that, like you mentioned, the cameras in the front for AR, and then the machine learning for kind of helping you, like maybe your life be better. And I can't help but think of Black Mirror episodes too. You know, yes. I mean, that guy is definitely, I mean, you're dropping some prophecy here too, but that guy is definitely very prophetic too. And some of the stuff that he's kind of putting out there in his episodes, I look at it as kind of like the Twilight Zone of the future of today, the modern day Twilight Zone with its technology. But anyway, I just think about like that episode where she becomes like, remember she like becomes a servant to herself. And
yeah.
He shrinks her down and she becomes like a servant. That's like her punishment or something. And anyway, not to get too off track here, but you mentioned something in the display technology. And the first time I heard OLED was in an article that one of my former super guests, Andrea Picchi, put out there about Apple's iPhone 8. Apparently, and these are all rumors, of course, because Apple's real good at keeping that stuff buttoned up. But as we know, Apple is, even though they're certainly a different company without Jobs there, and the roadmap has ended. It's a pretty, it's kind of pretty evident to me that Steve Jobs' roadmap has ended, and they're trying to struggle to kind of stay innovative, in my opinion. But the one thing that I did notice is that they are apparently, rumor has it, that they are adding an OLED display technology to their iPhone 8. And so we know that Apple is still very influential. This tells me something, especially based on what you just told us about how VR, any true like a mixed reality experience, is going to require this sort of display technology for it to actually be a great experience. So that was interesting to me. It kind of perked up my ears a a little bit about that. If Apple does add this display technology, to me, it says that they know something too about VR and mixed reality and are really wanting to stay ahead of the curve there. But apparently the trade-off is that the price point is going to be somewhere, rumor has it again, in the $1,200 to $1,600 range or something for an iPhone. So
yeah, we will see what happens. Apple is a big company to watch right now. They are fully aware of their reputation at the moment. They also have a huge bank.
Mm-hmm.
So
good point.
I am just as frustrated as you are as a longtime Apple user. Yeah. I just bought my first Android as a second phone, and I'm basically pushing myself to use the Android. And then I bought my first PC in a while to run my HTC Vive. So I'm, you know, as a designer, for the first time in a long time, I see myself starting to explore those other platforms because of the lack of innovation and growth that I've been seeing happen at Apple. But I am optimistic about 2017, especially September of 2017. And the reason for that is twofold. One, because of the information that we have received, and you know, some of it is definitely rumors. Other information is a little bit more concrete, in my opinion, about what is going to happen in September of 2017 with Apple. And the other is because of what has already happened in their last event with the releases that they had during that time. So I believe that Apple will bring AR into the mainstream in 2017, and they're already starting to do that. They're a big company to watch in this space. They already made their huge investment with ARKit, allowing developers to start creating AR experiences. And there's a reason why they released ARKit before they released any real AR devices, and that's because you need to have programs available and running on those devices in order to demonstrate the technology to an audience. So that's one of the big things, the big hurdles that we're facing right now with the adoption of VR and AR, is that I can sit here on this podcast and explain this technology and these experiences to you for the next 45 minutes to an hour, and I can rant and rave about it as much as you want. But most of the time, people aren't really going to get it until they actually experience it. And that's why I say what you need to do is use an HTC Vive, whether you go to a demonstration or you purchase one yourself. You need to get into one of those to understand what we're actually talking about here, because the Google Cardboard, a Gear VR, a Sony PlayStation VR, they're awesome. Don't get me wrong, like incredible experiences, and they're what got me into this. I live in Brazil. I work remotely from Brazil, so access to technology here is very difficult because of the taxes and tariffs that they impose on every single import from outside of the country's borders, especially electronics, and especially from like Western capitalist nations. So because of that, I started with the Google Cardboard because that was the easiest way to get into this stuff. And that sort of lit that spark in me. But I really pushed myself to ensure that I would eventually get a real VR setup, because that's really where you can start to understand what this stuff is capable of. So try out an HTC Vive if you're in a major metro area like New York or LA. There are places that you can go to, like The Void, for example, where you can try an even more intense VR experience. It's called Haptic VR. So that's where you like put on a suit and you can actually feel things touching you and stuff like that. It's very bizarre. I did it last time I was in New York City. And it's like a completely different level. But that's the type of stuff that we're talking about here. So when I discuss, for example, VR with the people that I work with, I noticed that when I was first talking about it, I was like, oh, we need to try out try developing something in virtual reality. We can use web VR and, make it accessible on the web and all this stuff. People were kind of like, oh, yeah, that's like a cool idea. And then what I did is I built my own website in virtual reality. And then I showed it to them and they were like, oh, my God, that's what you can do with this? So you have to have something where you can demonstrate it to users so that they can understand what's possible. And that's what Apple is building with ARKit. They're like building that sort of backlog of apps and use cases. And I really see that as just being the beginning. We can expect a much larger reveal from them on the 10th anniversary of the iPhone in September. And these are also going to be the first products that will be introduced at Apple's new headquarters, the huge ring building that they're building.
Tron.
Looks
like the Tron ring.
It's some bizarre stuff. Have you seen like the anti-drone technology that they incorporated there?
I have it's not, like, but I'm intrigued.
Yeah, they're going to be taking drones out of the sky, man. So
we already do that in Colorado with our 12 gauge.
Yeah. that's a much more effective God bless Colorado.
Amen, brother.
But anyway, this technology, this dates back a long way. This is stuff that you mentioned Steve Jobs' roadmap. Yeah. The AR technology, it was something that Steve Jobs and Tim Cook both had been working on. Hmm. Tim Cook has been quoted on a nearly weekly basis talking about the importance of AR and how it's going to be an essential part of daily life for at least the better part of a year now. And so we're talking about tens of billions of dollars of investment that Apple has made in augmented reality technology over the course of around 7 years that they've been spending on this. So what I would expect is a rework and relaunch of all of their major devices, including the iPhone, iPad. We already kind of saw that with the iPad Pro and the Apple TV. They're going to skip the iPhone 7S and just go straight into the iPhone 8 in September of 2017. And the iPhone 8, what we mostly know is that it's going to be made of glass. So they're going to abandon the aluminum metal casing. And it's going to have an edge-to-edge next-generation OLED display that is flexible. So you can bend it, and it's actually going to be curved. So what this opens itself up to is that it's probably going to include a 2-4 ounce headset that you can pop the phone into and turn it into a fully functional AR device. And that's where we start to see the implications of ARKit. That's the stuff that's going to be running on the iPhone 8. It'll have a next generation 3D sensor from PrimeSense, which is a startup that Apple acquired, and they're based out of Tel Aviv. So, you think of a lot of the optics technology that has originated there. They actually have over 600 engineers working in Israel on just this sensor alone. And that's something that we know. So that's kind of where I was, talking about like rumors versus what we actually know.
This is interesting stuff, Austin. Apple. So keep a pulse on Apple, defenders. This is some interesting stuff to kind of really be on the lookout for. And speaking of Apple, and this is sort of a segue into my next question, because I kind of, and I'm going to dive a little bit more into sort of my role in this conversation, and sort of how that's evolving. But I'm kind of a skeptic, and I always have been, and I don't think that's a bad thing, because I always really try to check things out for myself before believing them. But I'm a little concerned about some of this stuff, and I'll get into that in a little while. But do you remember that? Have you seen that picture of Mark Zuckerberg walking down the aisle, and then everybody in the audience is wearing a headset, and he just like looks like he's like the savior or something? Everybody's kind of droned out, and it's kind of creepy to me. It's eerie to me, and it makes me it harkens harkens me back to the 1984 commercial that Apple made, where everybody's just these drones are sitting in the audience, and then there's the Messiah on the screen, and I don't know, it just was weird to me. But you know, again, I'll dive more into kind of how I feel about it and sort of how my opinions are evolving a little bit about this. But I want to ask you for the defenders, and here's kind of the reason I caveated this part is because as a designer and as a user experience designer, I need to be able to suspend my biases. Okay. And I really want to do what's best for people. Any good designer, I think would agree with that sentiment. We want to do what's best and what's going to serve people the best and our audience and our business and all that. But, so I'm willing to kind of check my opinion at the door here in order to continue to pull this value out and be more open to this technology. Because I am kind of a neo-Luddite, man. but you know, I mean, how important is it for the defense? Listening, because this is fascinating stuff. I love technology. Don't get me wrong. I'm thankful for the tools we have. How important is it to learn these things as UX designers?
I think it's becoming increasingly critical. And I'm sure that most of your listeners were familiar with the article that Fast Company Design put out. It was well over a year ago that said that within the next 10 years, there will no longer be any UX designers. And they said there will be virtual interface designers. And so basically, that was a little bit of a shock tactic, in my opinion. What a more accurate assessment would be that the role of the UX designer is going to dramatically change within the next 10 years. And it's a very, very good and very exciting thing. And as somebody that has built my own VR and AR experiences from the ground up, so we're talking like very basic design, code, deployment, and everything, I can tell you that the fundamentals of UX are absolutely going to remain the same. Don't make me think is going to be just as true or perhaps even more true in VR and in AR and mixed reality, whatever you want to call it, as it was with 2D interfaces. However, the technology and the mediums that we work within are on the verge of a major revolution. And what that means is that the tools and the techniques that we use will drastically change. So in the same way that we design our 2D interfaces on a 2D computer right now, we will eventually design VR and mixed reality experiences, which are 3D and immersive experiences, using 3D and immersive tools. So it's sort of weird right now the way that we're designing VR, because we're doing them on 2D tools, but we're creating 3D experiences. You're using your monitor and your computer to create an immersive experience, but soon you will create an immersive experience inside of an immersive tool. And I've already started to do some of this with my HTC Vive. There are tools that you can use to wireframe out VR experiences. I've even used Google Tilt Brush to sketch out VR experiences that we're creating at HubSpot. So we'll start to see that the ways that designers approach design and problems and that they create solutions will change. And it's now, in my opinion, more important and more exciting than ever to become a part of this.
Wow. Well, we've talked a little bit about this, but you've taken a lot of initiative to start your own experiments in VR and AR. What motivated you to do this, Austin?
Yeah, so I'm a serial self-learner. So I wanted to teach myself how to design and develop in mixed reality. I wanted to help establish some early UX patterns within mixed reality and augmented reality, because it's very, very, it's very primitive right now. So I wanted to help to establish those patterns and even identify early effective use cases. Like, we don't even, not only do we not really know how we're going to be designing for this stuff, but we don't even really know what we're going to be creating and how people are going to be using it. And then eventually I wanted to help begin forging early paths to revenue, because just as all of these sort of interspersed technologies are being seen as tools and gadgets, and when brought together, they're seen as a bigger revolution. Right now, the apps and experiences that we're creating for mixed reality are mostly games and toys. And so we still need to figure out what is going to be the practical application for these technologies and what businesses are going to be brought out of them. So I started by creating an experiment and building something on my own. And I figured that that was the best way to do this. I learn by making.
Yeah, well, and I appreciate you doing that, because that's the reason we're having this conversation today, Austin. I mean, you are somebody who is doing this already, and you're real early too. I mean, and so that's exciting to me. And so I know that I've already learned a ton, and we're going to continue to learn more. But I kind of mentioned before my question about why should designers learn this stuff, and I'll kind of dive in a little bit more to kind of my feelings about this, or my concerns a little bit about kind of this world where we have headsets on all the time. You know, I'm concerned from a social perspective. I mean, there's already dudes in the subway with their VR headsets on, and they're acting really strange, calling attention to themselves. And I mean, there's only so much room, right, to kind of do a 360 view on when you're sitting next to people on a subway. It's odd to me. I don't know. And then I think of the Samsung commercials on right before Christmas, when, you know, obviously it's a great time to sell merchandise. But I just remember the commercial with the family, and they're all sitting together. And it's like, maybe they haven't seen each other for 5 years, right? Maybe distance has kept them apart. And then they're sitting together, and instead of like looking each other in the eye and having a conversation, they're all checked out on their headsets. And it's just concerning to me. It feels like we're moving into like a Her world. You remember that movie Her? Did you see that?
It feels, to me, in
many ways, it feels like we're kind of moving into that kind of world where everyone's together physically, but completely disconnected emotionally and socially. And I mean, the art of conversation already seems to be a dying craft. You know, like if you want to break up with your significant other, just drop a text, right? Or you want to ghost somebody. Like, it just feels like we're just kind of losing some of that. And I mean, is our reality so bad that we constantly need to be looking to escape it? So that's one of my concerns. And I express some of these in an article I wrote. It's called What's Wrong with Your Actual Reality? You know, such as, apart from porn, unfortunately, and painting in the air, what are some actual problems being solved with VR? And then I started researching VR and preparing for this time, Austin. And I'll be honest, although I still bear some of my social concerns and cultural concerns, my perspective has shifted dramatically. Just like any tool, VR can be used for bad or good. And I have learned about some medical breakthroughs and accessibility challenges being addressed. And of course, as the empathetic user defender that I am, it's actually really softening the blow for me and actually breeding curiosity. In fact, thanks to you preparing for this conversation, I actually bought a Google Cardboard, and that has been interesting. So I want to ask you, and I know you've got a lot of thoughts on this, what are some really beneficial use cases you're seeing out there for mixed reality?
Yeah. So, Jason, first, I have to say that I agree with you in a lot of the concerns that you voiced there. I think that there's definitely some scare tactics that are being thrown out in the media for more clicks and everything like that, because it's an easy target. You know, we're very prone and open to the idea of a 1984 type of world, or a world where we're disconnected, because it's something that's been parroted so much in books and movies and other media. But at the same time, I do share a lot of concerns regarding personal interaction, privacy, especially. The amount of data that these devices are already collecting about us is insane, and the amount of data that they will collect is just going to improve. And we're kind of at a point where our devices, and especially our connected devices, so like if you have a bunch of, you know, maybe your phone and your home device and your photo app and your email and all of that stuff is maybe it's all Google products, right? Well, Google can take all of this information, and we're kind of at a point where they can know you a little bit better than you know you, because there's so much data that is being collected on you. And that's a scary prospect. And I don't think that we're at a point where governments are fully aware of the rate at which this stuff is advancing, and the companies that are aware of it are not doing what they need to do to protect it, nor to be transparent about how they're collecting and using this data. In fact, I think that we're seeing companies become less and less forthcoming about what they're doing with that information. And I in general, I think that privacy and, you know, the freedom to express yourself and to be who you are and say what you think is something that shouldn't be put under threat or traded for the conveniences of these technologies. So that's a problem. And I also see that beyond communication and privacy, we could start to trade in perhaps some of life's greatest experiences for things that aren't quite as great, but are close enough and they're much easier to access. So, for example, my fiance is, you know, she's really concerned. She always brings this up to me, like whenever she gets in the HTC Vive and she tries something, like she'll try a racing game or she'll, you know, use Google Earth and to go to Thailand or something like that. And she's like, are people going to stop traveling once these experiences become so realistic that, you know, it's hard to tell the difference. And the only answer I can ever give to that is I sure as hell hope not.
Right.
So
I know you've got strong opinions on travel, the benefits of travel. You've written about it.
Yeah. It's working remote, living in Brazil, traveling the way that I have has just completely changed my life. And,
and helped you as a designer too, right?
It has,
in many ways.
It's really helped me. I bring a completely different perspective. So yeah, I share those concerns, and we're also seeing that, you know, some individuals are reporting a general dissatisfaction with reality after they exit VR. There have been some articles written about that where, you know, when you're in VR and it's very immersive, you sort of gain superpowers. You can manipulate the environment around you. You can, you know, teleport from one place to another. You can destroy things. Usually that's like the first thing that people do, actually, is like if you put them in a room with a bunch of objects, they start throwing the objects across the room and blowing them up and making them larger, making themselves smaller. You know, there's games where you can create like a Lego world, basically, and then shrink yourself down and walk around in it. It's incredible.
Wow.
And then you go back to real reality and it's like, whoa, you know, why can't I knock down this wall in my apartment and just see what happens, you know?
Yeah, well, give them a little PCP and I guarantee they'll knock that wall down.
That is true. I think that there are some concerns to be had, but in general, I think that the benefits vastly outweigh any drawbacks that we would see created by this technology.
Yeah, so there's going to be drawbacks with anything, right? I mean, somebody, you can invent the most like life world changing thing in the world, and somebody's going to find a way to use it for bad, right? We can't control the way people use things we design. I think that's maybe one of the biggest takeaways right here.
Yeah. So you were mentioning concerns with social interaction earlier, and I think that we will find in some cases VR especially will start to kill some social interaction. I think AR is actually going to bring us more into real reality because we're going to spend less time looking down at our phones and more time interacting with the environment around us. As I've said on the previous episode that we recorded, we aren't addicted to our phones or to our iPads. We're addicted to the experiences and the information that they provide us. And as soon as that information becomes independent of those devices, devices, we will no longer want those devices in our lives. So when that information is integrated into our environment, when we can be at dinner and see the text pop up on the table instead of, you know, have it be buzzing in our pocket, that's something that, that we're going to prefer. So I do believe that, that AR will allow us to come back into reality in a much more liberating way and enhanced way than before. And VR will probably in some ways take us a little bit out of that, but it will also liberate us in other ways. For example, we're seeing that VR is taking hold at a much vaster rate in China and Southeast Asia than it is in the Western world. And that's because the population density and the amount of people that live in a single household and the amount of space that one individual has in Asia is, on average, much lower than what we're used to in the Western world. So if you live with a family of 10 people and mom's being annoying and your brother and your sister, you're sick of talking to them and you kind of want to get away, but you share a room with two or three other people, well, you've never been able to really fully get away until now when you can enter a virtual escape, which I think is compelling. Yeah.
That's interesting to me. Did you see the movie Baby Driver?
I have not.
It's really good. It's really good. And this is somewhat related, but, and I won't spoil the movie, but, and I'm sorry to interrupt you, but I feel like this is kind of an interesting case, use case possible for, there's a lot of young people growing up in non-ideal households. Okay. There's a lot of kids that are growing up in, let's be honest, just abusive environments, and their parents fight all the time. And it's just, there's never any peace. And in Baby Driver, this guy, the main character, he's a driver for a getaway for robberies, and he's trying to get out of it, but he owes the kingpin these tasks. Anyway, you get a glimpse of his backstory, and that was his environment growing up. His parents constantly fighting, the dad physically, verbally abusive, all that, and his escape was putting his earbuds in. Music. Yeah. Music was his escape. And so he always had his earbuds in, even when he was doing the getaway robberies. It seemed like he wasn't paying attention, but he was. But that was just, that became his reality. And it was a consolation. It was the only consolation that he had. And I just wonder if maybe that's a benefit too for this. You know, it's a way to kind of not fully escape reality, because you never really fully can, but maybe it's a way to kind of bring a little bit of consolation, a little bit of tranquility to somebody who's just in a really awful environment, perhaps out of their control.
Yes, if you're in an awful environment, or even if you're not, it's something that can take you to a different world. And I liken it a lot to, you know, we all grew up at our age with people that we knew that were huge movie buffs, or people that loved video games, or loved to read. And all of these things are just forms of, you know, taking yourself into a different world and experience. And VR is yet another manifestation of that.
That's a really great point, Austin. We go to the movie. Movie going is still America's favorite pastime. And I'll speak of America just because that's where I live. But and I'm thankful for that, because it helps my business where I work. keep going to the movies. Get there early for the first week show. But I mean, there's a reason for that. It is kind of an escape, right? And it's an okay escape, because life's tough, man.
And I think you can even use escape in like a very broad sense of the term. It doesn't have to be an escape from anything bad. It could be an opportunity to experience something different. And that's actually one of, you know, the most powerful things about this technology for designers is that world that it's going to open up for our users and for us. And so as we were talking about social implications earlier, of course, you know, I think it's important to be able to think outside of your own culture and everything like that with what I mentioned with China and Southeast Asia and everything. But we are seeing major positive social implications from this technology already in the Western world. An excellent example of that is Altspace VR, which is something that you don't need to have a VR device in order to use. You can use it on your laptop, use it on your cardboard, or use it on your HTC Vive. It works on everything because it runs on WebVR technology, which is the same technology that I actually built that VR website that I was talking about on. Yeah. So something that runs on your laptop or on your HTC Vive, it's highly accessible. And what Altspace VR is doing is they're creating virtual spaces for people to come together, whether it be for meetups or concerts or comedy shows. We're seeing a similar thing with Facebook Spaces, but you know, in a little bit of a different direction. We saw that launch at F8. And I love this because it's allowing people around the world to come together and experience things together and share information and share their perspectives in a whole new way, in a much more immersive way. And for me, it's been a major relief because when I left the United States and I said, I'm going to move to Brazil, but, you know, realistically, over 50% of the time, I'm not even in Brazil. I'm traveling somewhere else. I just got back from Belgium, and before that, it was South Africa. I can start to feel a little bit isolated because a lot of the vast advancements that are happening in technology and in design are happening in the United States and Western Europe for the most part. So I'm usually in South America or some other place that isn't Western Europe, and I'm cut off. I feel a lot of the time cut off from that stuff. So being able to go to meetups that I would have previously only have had access to if I physically lived in Boston or New York or San Francisco, being able to attend those meetings in virtual reality and feel like I'm actually interacting with the speakers, or in some cases I've actually given speeches through VR, that has been bizarre. Wow. It makes you feel like you're much more connected and less isolated, and I'm seeing more social interaction happening through that.
What about for like therapy, for treatment, and folks that are looking for help? How can VR benefit that?
Yeah, so this has been maybe one of the more widely discussed and more important use cases of mixed reality, is that we're finding huge health benefits from it, and it's being used for therapeutical causes. So, for example, USC's Institute for Creative Technologies is actually using what's called VR exposure therapy to help individuals that are suffering from post-traumatic stress disorder. It's installed at over 60 sites throughout the United States, using VA hospitals, military bases, or university centers as the hub for this stuff.
Wow.
And they're actually finding that they are, on at minimum, they are helping people to cope better with the PTSD that they're suffering from. And in many cases, they're actually finding that their patients are overcoming it simply through the addition of VR exposure therapy.
Wow. That's exciting stuff, and a really necessary thing, because I don't know the statistic, but it's staggering, especially the military personnel that come home from being stationed overseas, wherever they happen to be, and experiencing war especially. It's staggering, the suicide rate, man, for military personnel particularly. And I think that this is a really welcome case for VR. And if even, you know, one person's life is saved, I mean, that's worth it. I mean, it's just a tragedy.
Yeah, I mean, we're talking about a population that is generally very underserved and underappreciated after they've done what they've done for us.
And, exactly.
I think that's something that we'll see as a general theme for virtual reality, augmented reality, mixed reality, in terms of the most compelling use cases, is that this technology is, you know, from an entertainment perspective, from a social perspective and everything, it's going to serve the masses that are already very well served just fine. But on a deeper level, it's going to bring incredible agents of change to underserved populations.
That's interesting. I can see this technology and these emergent technologies piggybacking on legendary psychologist Albert Banduras. I think I said that right. Have you ever seen the movie What About Bob?
Yeah.
So you remember, that was hilarious. You remember Bill Murray, like he was going to see Richard Dreyfuss and Richard Dreyfuss was a psychologist. And I'm almost positive that the whole baby steps thing was inspired by the work of Albert Banduras. But basically, you know, he's like baby steps. It's a work called self-efficacy, which is also known as guided mastery. So Albert Banduras, I'm just going to say Albert because I can't say the last name very well. He was able to cure subjects of things like snake phobias in 4 hours using his self-efficacy method of baby steps, of exposure, a little small exposures to the thing that the patients are most terrified of. So I think that I can see some things happening here. I can see VR perhaps like possibly cutting time significantly and even more conveniently for phobias. And I'd love to see someone grab hold of this. I wouldn't be surprised if somebody's thinking about this and maybe working on it. But conversely, I can see it being used for bad too, like creating far too realistic nightmares that maybe tap into psyche, perpetuating like worse fears. Do you remember that Black Mirror episode? There goes Black Mirror again.
Yeah.
You remember that?
Where
he went into that haunted house and it was like a game. It was supposed to be a game, but they basically got right into his head and unearthed his worst possible fears and just like screwed the guy up. That's scary.
Unreal. I think that's a general theme is that if you want to, Black Mirror, I think, is very tastefully done.
Yes.
I would suggest if you haven't watched it, do watch it. It's on Netflix. Don't watch the first episode. Start with the second episode.
I concur.
Because the first episode will turn you off and it's not representative of the rest of the show.
Yep.
But and like there was the episode about the future war soldier where
yes.
you use augmented reality as a weapon of war. There are a lot of implications. You can even, when you jump into an HTC Vive, you really start to understand the magnitude of not only, as we were talking about earlier, how much this could help someone or enhance entertainment, but how much it could damage somebody and how much power we have as virtual interface designers, if that's what you want to call us, over our users. Not only are we going to be empowered to create more and empowered to empower our users, but we're also going to be handed a massive responsibility to understand where the line is. And that's something that we haven't totally been confronted with before, on a 2D screen, sure, you can use those, you know, jump scare tactics and videos and stuff like that.
Yeah.
But, you know, you are limited by the technology. And we know that designers haven't always been too great at handling ethics in the past. So I think that it will be interesting because even in the Vive, as I started to discuss earlier, you can use an application called the Lab. And what this does is it's designed to teach you how to walk around and interact with a virtual world because the interface and the sensory inputs and everything are a little different. And one of the experiments that you can go into basically puts you in this like cottage that is full of magical potions and interactive like animals and stuff like that. And it's like really dark. There's like weird noises that happen. And then at one point, if you look at this frog that looks like it's just a sort of ceramic frog sitting on a table, it will come to life and it will shoot its tongue out at you and look like it's, you know, trying to like get you. It's
I'm gonna have
not
nightmares.
Something. Yeah, well, it was really bizarre for me because if you saw that like in a movie or on a, you know, a computer screen, it would not have been scary. Mm. But because you're in that environment, just a frog was terrifying.
Oh,
something that was not by our normal standards, you know, something that we would consider to be scary, was absolutely terrifying to me in that moment. And I physically jumped and I actually fell over the first time that it happened. And so you realize, like, oh, wow, you know, fully immersive sound and visuals, you can really scare somebody.
Yeah.
It's bizarre.
Just wait till David Lynch makes his first VR movie. Dear God, help us. That guy, I mean, just his 2D stuff is disturbing enough.
Yeah.
I hope he doesn't. But then again, it could be an interesting art form. But I was just thinking about something too, you know, and what happens when marketers get a hold of this? We're going to start seeing 360 banner ads. I just think about like the Minority Report. You remember how, I mean, it's still, Minority Report is still so ahead of its time. I mean, but you remember the retina implant that, again, a lot of Black Mirror episodes kind of use in context. But you remember when he was just walking through the mall, like everything he looked at, every ad, it brought in an augmented reality experience and kind of like advertised to him because it knew that he needed new sneakers or something. Like, that's something that is kind of a little, I mean, marketers, you know, God bless us, because I'm in marketing and we use design. Design is used to persuade and to sell things, and that's understandable. But sometimes with the dark patterns and such that we already have, I hope we can somehow avoid that happening with mixed reality.
I do too. Realistically, we probably won't. But I do think that a lot of the principles that we've uncovered for good digital marketing are also going to hold true in mixed reality in the same way that the principles for good user experience design will hold true in mixed reality. So this is, you know, this is something I've been talking about at HubSpot. Of course, if you're not familiar with us, we sort of invented inbound marketing and we produce software that helps marketers to do business online and everything like that. It's some powerful stuff and a lot of responsibility comes with it, again.
Sure.
And what we found is that non-disruptive advertising, or advertising that isn't really even advertising, is the most effective kind. So create good content, good experiences that people are going to love and be naturally attracted to, and then the users and the customers will come to you instead of you going out there and disrupting them. So where I think that we can see good things happen with mixed reality is now, you know, perhaps you'll find that when you're looking at that device in the mall or that pair of shoes, the information that you want is all going to be right there. And it's going to be a much more enriching experience. And then because you have that information and you can learn more about the product, you're going to be more likely to buy. So that's a compelling form of marketing, is when we can tie, okay, let's do better things for the user, and then the conversion on our products is going to be higher. But I can't help but think that, you know, those really creepy ads that you see in your Instagram feed that could have only been created by the device listening to you without your permission, or the retargeting ads that you get from Amazon or whatever, you know, all of a sudden, not only are you going to see retargeting on the web, but that billboard that you drive past on the way to work every day, that's going to become a personalized digital ad
all
for
digital,
you or something like that.
Billboards, yeah. Wow.
Yeah, or like you think of Waze. Like, do you ever use Waze?
No.
Okay, so Waze is it's a navigation app that's really popular here in Brazil. Google owns it now, but it's sort of like crowdsourced navigation. Anyway, Waze will detect where you are and then serve you ads based off of your location. So like here, if we're driving past a gas station, it'll say, hey, come into this gas station and you can get, you know, two hot dogs and a Coke for the price of one, or, you know, they have a gas special that's going on. Or if you drive past a mall, it'll say, come in and, you know, this shoe store is having a special right now. Or if you drive past a concert venue, it'll say, Justin Bieber is about to come here, or whatever. Like, it serves you ads based off of your location. It's very contextual. It's smart. But I'm not too excited about the day when my car starts to put that stuff all over my windshield or something like that. So, yeah, I think that this will be interesting. Again, a lot of it's going to come down to the designers and the marketers to understand what are the effective design patterns, what are the effective forms of marketing. Let's adhere to that stuff.
Amen. Yeah. And let's be ethical about it too. I think you alluded to this earlier. I think you even said it that, with these coming technologies, designers are going to have the biggest responsibility they've ever had, right? To design responsibly.
Yep, absolutely.
Is your head spinning yet, Defenders? If so, you're not alone. We've actually only begun to scratch the surface, believe it or not. There is more to come in part two. We will continue to dive into use cases. We will cover design patterns, companies to watch, and, of course, how to get started, because I have a feeling that you're going to be very interested in learning more about how to do that and maybe get started with your own experiments, like Austin has. So make sure you're subscribed so you don't miss it. It's at userdefenders.com/subscribe. That will connect you to the RSS feed on whatever device you happen to prefer for podcast listening pleasures. I want to thank Chris Combs for the extraordinary editing, and I will be releasing part two. I'm not sure exactly when, but keep an eye on it. Again, the subscribe is the best way to find it right when it's ready, but I'm hoping within the next week or so. Anyway, thanks so much for listening. I hope you're intrigued, and keep an eye out. Until next time, fight on, my friends.